välkomna till ett nytt avsnitt av Människorättspodden.
Jajamän, och här är vi i studion. Det är Rut Nordström, advokat, och Rebecka Ahlstrand, advokat.
Vi är Människorättsadvokaterna. Och idag, Rebecka, så ska vi göra ett samtal med Heidi Brown från New York Law School. Berätta lite.
Ja, men det stämmer. Vi hörde ju henne här. Hon var ju och besökte advokatsamfundet och hade en föreläsning. Det var kanske runt 10 månader sedan då.
Nej, men det var ett tag sedan.
Ja, det var ett tag sedan. Ja, men vi lyssnade på nätet. Vi hade inte möjlighet att vara där på plats. Men vi var så inspirerade, så vi visade föreläsningen för vår personal.
Exakt.
Och sen tog du kontakt med henne.
Ja, och sen har vi haft kontakt. Och sen kom vi på att nej, men vi måste ju ha med henne i podden.
Ja.
Och hon älskar att resa. Så att just nu så var hon i Italien. Och vi hade ju tänkt åka över till Italien och träffa henne. För vi älskar också att resa.
Ja, det gör vi.
Men vi ska ju till Italien här i höst. Så att det blev inte riktigt så. Men vi hade ett jätteintressant samtal. Egentligen om 3 olika teman. Det var dels om värderingar. Ledarskap och mindset. Som hon pratar mycket om. Hon har bland annat pratat mycket om face your fear. Alltså hur man kan konfrontera sina rädslor och övervinna dem. Och prata också om att vara rotad i sina värderingar. Och vi är en värderingsstyrd byrå.
Precis.
Pratar mycket om värderingar. Och vi har ju definierat våra liksom, kärnvärden som vi vill ska genomsyra vår organisation och vårt företag. Och det är bland annat tillit och förtroende. Och det är ansvar och kompetens. Och sen är det integritet och omtanke. Mm. Och det här är värdeord som vi försöker implementera i vårt vardagsarbete. Men också i våra omsorg om extra utsatta människor genom våra juristjourer och så.
Precis, vi har ju flera juristjourer och har haft på olika platser.
Ja.
Där vi ger råd till utsatta flyktingar och utsatta människor.
Mm. Precis, och det här med värderingar. Jag tyckte hon, vi ska helt enkelt ta kontakt med henne här nu. Vi ska ringa upp henne på hennes amerikanska mobil där hon befinner sig i Italien just nu. Då.
Precis.
Så håll till godo. Yes, welcome to the Human Rights Podcast, Heidi. We're so happy to have you. How is Italy?
Thank you. Italy is lovely. I'm in Naples for a month doing a lot of writing and I'm so happy.
Yeah, we're a little bit jealous because we love Italy.
Yeah, we really do. We were hoping, you know, that we could actually take a trip to Italy to meet you, but it wasn't possible. We have so much to do here at the office
Too
in
bad.
June. Maybe next time.
Well, next time, or I'll just have to come to Sweden to meet you.
Exactly.
And you were here recently, right?
Yeah, it was almost a year ago.
It was a year ago.
About 10 months ago.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. So Heidi, please tell us and the listeners about yourself and about your work.
Okay, yes. So I am a law professor in New York City, but I kind of define myself as a writer and an author as well. I practiced law for 20 years before I started teaching, and I've been teaching for about 15 years now. Actually, my first 5 years of teaching overlapped with the latter years of my practice of law. But I tell my students I identify more as a writer and an author before all my other sort of fancy titles of professor or lawyer, because writing is one of my well-being pillars. I love to write, and I've written 3 books for law students and lawyers about well-being in the practice of law, one on introversion, one on fear, and one on the concept of flourishing or thriving as our authentic self.
Oh, wonderful. We have to get hold of those books.
We do. We're going to buy them for the office.
And we're waiting for them to be translated to Swedish, Heidi.
Yes, I will personally deliver them to Sweden for you.
Oh, wonderful. Wow, we're looking forward to that. And, you know, this is the Human Rights Podcast, and we are the Scandinavian human rights lawyers. And what is your experience of human rights?
Yes, when I first saw when you all reached out to me as a human rights podcast, I had a little bit of imposter syndrome, although I don't really love that phrase. And I was thinking, how does my work relate to human rights? But then when I looked at your website and I was really giving more thought into how my work connects to human rights or what's my life experience, and I realized that freedom of expression and freedom of thought is really my life's work. I mean, grew up in a really, really religious household. My father was a minister, and, you know, my parents were really good people, but my brother and I were not really taught how to express ourselves freely. And I think that that kind of stayed true with me. I didn't really know what my voice sounded like for 20 years of practicing law. And it was really when I started teaching and the wonderful, you know, human right of education, really, I learned how to teach my students how to tap into their authentic voices and be able to stand up for people that can't stand up for themselves. But I think that freedom of expression and freedom of thought is how human rights relates to my work as an educator and also as a writer. I felt very scared and terrified to write about things that, you know, people didn't really want me to write about. And that's been my voice. I really tapped into how I can help people by being vulnerable and open and honest about my own struggles with anxiety and fear and feeling censored and actually feeling bullied in the legal profession in the United States. So that would be my connection to human rights.
So good and so important. And, you know, you mentioned that to be a voice. We actually, one of our leading, you know, goals is to be a voice for the voiceless and also to raise our voice for those that cannot, you know, speak up for themselves, like all those vulnerable people and that we meet in our legal clinics. And so thank you for sharing, Heidi. That was really beautiful.
Thank you.
And also the connection between human rights and our values.
Yes, we heard you speak a little bit about values at the Bar Association, and we'd love to hear more about your what are your core values and how do you work with values? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I discovered sort of three ways to help, first of all, myself tap into what my core values are. And then I use these tools to help my students tap into their values because a lot of times law students or young lawyers, I think, forget why they pursued a career in law to begin with. And by going back to our values or even identifying for the first time, what are our values that we decide, I mean, instead of society or our parents or teachers or other people telling us what our values should be, it's really important for us to figure that out for ourselves. So I started digging into this and I looked at materials by the Values Project out of Australia. And then a really good friend of mine named Georgiana Confino created an incredible values discovery worksheet. And then I took a coaching course through a teacher named Dr. Robert Biswas-Diener, and he did this exercise where he had us draw a tree on a piece of paper, and he said the soil beneath the roots are our resources that are available to us, but our values are the roots of the tree. Our values are the roots of the tree that that filter.
Yeah.
We use our values to filter everything that's being thrown at us. You know, and good things like all these resources we have, all these opportunities we have, but our values are what help us filter all of these competing stimuli. So then we can rely on our character strengths. Our strengths are like the trunk of the tree, and then establish our goals, which are the branches of the tree, and then our action items are the leaves of the tree. So I loved that metaphor.
I love that metaphor
for me when
too.
I did.
It's so good.
Yeah, when it's so good. It's so empowering. And what's really cool about the tree exercise is that everybody's tree looks different.
Right.
So we can, the exercise is like, is your tree a palm tree? Is it an elm tree? Is it a tree in a forest? Is it alone in a field? So we all have these different trees as a metaphor, but the most important part is the roots, our values. So I realized for me in doing these exercises that my values relate a lot to individuality, which I think connects to human rights. It's about the individual and society, but how we need to be true to ourselves and free to be ourselves as individuals. And I realized that a lot of my core values involve those types of things: authenticity, autonomy, freedom of movement. The reason why I'm in Italy right now is because travel is one of my well-being pillars. I need to move.
Wonderful.
and feel safe within my own skin to be able to take this time to be alone, to write and think. So yes, things like that, autonomy, authenticity, safety, freedom of movement, opportunity for self-growth, and definitely inclusion. I was always existing in these hierarchical schema, whether in law school or in the law firm environment or even legal academia, and I'm sort of the anti-hierarchy person.
Yeah.
I want everyone to feel like they can tap into their full potential.
And that's a little bit more of the Swedish approach, I think. I think you should, thrive in Sweden as well. But,
absolutely.
Values, I think values is so important, and we work a lot with values. But how do you work with values at your workplace? And do you see any obstacles in applying values in the practical life? Because for some people, they may be aware of their core values, but then it's another thing to really apply them in their practical life. Mm. Do you have any advice there?
Definitely. Absolutely. My difficulties, I worked for 3 different law firms over the span of my 20 years of law practice, and I've worked with 3 different law schools. So my career life has had a circuitous trajectory, and it has not been a straight line. It's been very curvy, and I'm really happy about that now. But what I struggled with at other opportunities, I'm very happy in the job that I have right now, and I can talk about how the dean at my law school cares a lot about institutional values and also individual values. The problem at my prior jobs was my individual values did not align with the institutional values.
Exactly.
And I found myself, it's such a conflict, right? Mm. And I didn't know how to amplify my voice authentically to say out loud what I'm being asked to do does not align with my personal values. Either they were asking me to do things that I didn't agree with or didn't fit my personality, didn't align with my strengths either, in addition to my values. And so I think that's where we run into trouble when we're not, first of all, clear about what our individual values are, but we also don't know how to articulate our values in a positive, productive way when they're not matching up with an institution that we feel obligated to stay with, either out of financial needs or some sort of obligation feeling. I think a lot of younger attorneys feel trapped in certain situations because, at least in the United States, there's a lot of education debt, etc., and they don't feel free to move. But again, if movement is one of your values, and you're feeling trapped in an environment which isn't healthy, that's a problem, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and can you share a time when your values, convictions, or beliefs were challenged in your professional journey?
Maybe an example, like you mentioned before, that what you were asked to do didn't align with your core values, and what did you do?
Yes, in all 3 of the law firms where I work, and I've written about this, I work with extremely strong, kind of volatile personalities in which the people in charge were very smart and successful, but they were mean. They were bullies, really, and they got away with it because the firms really prioritized money over culture, over firm culture.
Mm.
And I found myself really caught in the crossfire of that at all 3 firms, and I didn't know. Again, I thought there was something wrong with me. Mm. I thought I was just weak or not tough enough for the profession, which now I look back on that and I feel sad for my younger self because
yes.
I had so much to give in terms of research and writing and thinking and thoughtful problem solving, but I let these individuals crush me.
And a loss for those firms as well, right?
Exactly. A big loss for them that didn't see that and discover that and value that.
Completely. And that's when I started teaching, I realized, oh, wow, my students, we have got to start talking about these things out loud because we're going to our profession is, and the society is going to miss out on these really impactful voices if we let certain personalities continue to behave like that and have this lack of civility. It really did rise to the level of bullying in the situations that I experienced. And so I wish I'd handled it better. I didn't handle it well. And I ended up leaving three jobs over a 20-year period. So it wasn't like every year that happened, but I wish I could go back and stand up for myself in a way that I've learned and had to teach myself how to do now, many years later, doing a lot of work, physically, mentally, emotionally.
What advice would you give to yourself now, your younger self? I mean, how to find the courage to stand up for yourself and to stand up for your values? Maybe it was the right decision, you just had to leave, but I mean, would you give any advice to yourself right now, and what would that be?
Yes. One thing that I wish that I had known or learned back then, and that I advocate now that we start teaching in law school, is a different type of intelligence called somatic intelligence. Mm. And I discovered this in researching my books on introversion and my books on fear, because I walked around with a lot of fear and anxiety back in those stories that I just mentioned. And when I started studying somatic intelligence, because somatic is our body, how we physically manifest anxiety, fear, imposter syndrome, all the things that hold us back from standing up for ourselves. Mm. And I had to put myself in boxing lessons to understand how my body functions when I'm afraid. We all hear about the fight, flight, or freeze response.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. When I feel bullied or intimidated or just scared in general, I first freeze and then I want to run away. Mm. But what happens to me, I have a very robust blushing response, so my face turns really red. Mm. And when I was practicing law, these more confident personalities would see that and go for the attack. Mm. So now I've learned it through boxing lessons that it's about the breathing. Coach always tells me either that I'm over breathing, I'm hyperventilating, or I'm holding my breath. Hmm. And I didn't even notice that that's what I do. And also the way I carry myself, my physical posture, my stature. So I wish I could go back into those moments and do what I have trained myself to do now that enables me to get up and speak in front of 1,000 people, to recalibrate physically, stand like an athlete or a performer. We all have our favorite athletes or our favorite performers. Model that sort of recalibration of our physical self so that we can align our emotional selves, our mental soundtrack, and step into that performance arena feeling powerful and be able to say in a calm, measured manner, this behavior is not acceptable, you're not going to get your best work out of me if you treat me this way. Mm. So there's ways of handling it without quitting the job, although sometimes quitting, it's better to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think there are ways for us to recalibrate physically, mentally, emotionally, and step into that, I call it like the performance arena, step into the performance arena, feeling empowered on all those levels. Mm.
So good. Mm-hmm. And it's all about that, mindset. When you face, setbacks or moments of self-doubt, but how do you maintain that, resilient mindset that you just described for us right now?
it's a challenge. One kind of mindset that I've adopted, I really do love the analogy of starting to treat ourselves like athletes or like performers. The sports analogy doesn't work for a lot of people. But when we think about athletes and performers, they just don't focus on the one skill that brings them glory on the field or on the stage. Mm. They focus on multiple dimensions. And things go wrong. Either they get injured or they lose a game or some of my favorite singers or musicians have literally fallen off the stage by accident. Things go wrong. But,
yeah, true.
But life does not have to be perfect. And in fact, I find that, especially through all my travels, I like when things don't go perfectly, because that's when the true beauty of life kind of comes out. So giving ourselves these mindsets that every day is just a new day. Every new project is a new project. They don't have to go perfectly. It's okay to make mistakes. Sometimes art comes out through a mistake. I mean, obviously, we don't want to make catastrophic mistakes as attorneys, and we try to avoid that at all costs. But it's okay to not be perfect on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour, day-by-day basis. So So that's how I try to work through things that I wish had gone a little bit better. But to me, honestly, writing about it really helped, because I, by writing things down, I noticed patterns and realized, oh, okay, well, that happened this time and it didn't go perfectly, but you know what? The world didn't come to an end. Mm. It's okay. And then I move on and set a new goal.
So good. So good. And I mean, what advice can you give to lawyers and other people in high performance professions where many believe they're supposed to know all the answers and make no mistakes? I mean, how? What advice could you give?
Yeah, I think that the more that more senior people in these different professions, I took a look at the medical profession, engineering profession, the sports arena, as I just mentioned, when I was working on my book called Untangling Fear, because I wanted to see how other professions handle mistake making. And what I noticed in some of these other professions, like entrepreneurship, for instance, there's safety. They create safety to make mistakes in the early stages of learning. Mm. Whereas in at least the United States, in legal education, there's all this emphasis on having to do it perfectly on day one. Well, that's just not realistic.
Mm.
So to me, if leaders in these different industries and our profession can talk more openly about mistake making and talking openly about how to avoid mistakes, obviously, but anticipate when a mistake might happen and talk about that out loud so we aren't just pretending like mistakes don't happen or that good lawyers don't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do.
Yeah.
Our profession is
all
complicated and complex all the time.
Yeah.
And the more we talk about that out loud and it will start to dissipate some of the fear that I think the newer members are of our profession have towards mistake making, and they'll be able to say out loud, hey, I need some help with this because I don't want to make a mistake, but I don't know what the right choice here is. We can't keep perpetuating the myth that you have to know what you're doing all the time.
So good. Good. And it's actually a question of leadership.
Yeah. Mm. And speaking of leadership, could you say something about, like, what are the most important decisions you make as a leader?
I really admire my dean at my law school now because I like his leadership style a lot. First of all, he encouraged us all to read a book called Unreasonable Hospitality by a restaurateur named Will Guidara. And I read this book and my mind was blown because, first of all, I've never had a boss. And I mentioned three law firms, three law schools. I've never had a boss talk to us so openly about wanting to create a great culture. And when I read this book, it was all about how the little things matter. The book is really about a restaurant, and the author was explaining how the way you place the napkin on the table and the way you go the extra mile to help somebody out, you know, a person who lost their cell phone, or it's really about the restaurant. But for me to have a leader in my law school have us read that made me realize he cares about details and wants all of us to create a lovely working environment, great culture, not only for ourselves, but for our students, and that everything matters, like scuff marks on the floors, or like that he wants great art in the positive, cheerful, great art in the hallway so the students can be surrounded by that. Things like that, that a lot of other leaders in the legal profession do not focus on. So I really admire that.
Quite a contrast from what you experienced before.
Exactly. And setting a tone for respect in conversations over my couple decades in lawyering and legal academia now, people don't always speak to each other with respect, which is the understatement of the year. But and at this place, every meeting just has this wonderful tone of we speak to each other with respect and we acknowledge that we're on a collective mission to do the best we can and actually thinking of mistakes, but we're going to make mistakes and we're going to talk to each other about mistakes that we've made openly. So not with blame shifting, but in a way that we can make things better for the next time.
So good.
Which
and
I really
actually,
like.
I mean,
I like
we learn the best from our mistakes. We've had, I have a sign on my office saying, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn.
Exactly.
You learn when you lose, you learn when you do your mistakes. And we want to speak a little bit more about teamwork as well, mm-hmm. because
you've written about how teams can hit so-called hive switch. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
And what is a hive switch?
Sure. So I learned that term during the pandemic. I went back to school and I got a master's in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. And one of the books that we read, or I think it was either a book or an article, was by a psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. His last name is H-A-I-D-T. Jonathan Haidt.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Really good. And in his book, he talked about the hive switch, and it was about how when. And personally, I'm all about the individual. Like, I'm an introvert. I love to be alone. I'm here in Italy alone. I don't want anybody with me.
Exactly.
But the concept of the hive intrigued me because it was about how when individuals start to get in sync with one another, like in synchrony. And the examples he used were like military troops marching or people at a sporting event, like I'm in Naples right now and everyone is obsessed with their soccer team, their football team.
Exactly.
And he was mentioning like sporting events. For me, it's an exercise class when I'm surrounded by a bunch of other people who have chosen that particular hour to get together to do something to improve themselves. I go to a lot of U2 concerts. I'm a huge fan of the Irish rock band U2.
Yeah.
That, to me, is a hive switch. It's when you're surrounded by people with a common mission and there's some sort of rhythm or movement happening, and you suddenly feel like, oh, wow. It's like this emotion of awe, like this wonder that we get this chance in life to do something amazing, and here we're doing it with somebody else.
Doing something bigger than ourselves, for a purpose or what it could be. Yeah. So good.
So how do you apply that, in a workplace? Maybe you were coming to that.
Yes. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. You get me so excited talking about these topics.
Yeah, we get too.
The way I see it playing out in the work environment is that we still, going back to like our individual human rights, we exist as individuals with individual values and individual strengths and individual goals. But in the work environment, if we can create space for us to share those individual values, strengths, and goals in the light or in the context or through the lens of the common mission of that work environment or that institution, I think it has another positive psychologist who wrote a book called Positivity Resonance, and I'm totally blanking on her name right now, and I'm going to be so mad at myself for forgetting. But she wrote a book called Positivity, and it's about positivity resonance, that we uplift each other, and that when more than one person gets together and we do what she called capitalization, where you by sharing ideas like this and goals and dreams and outcomes you'd like for the institution, you help each other build. It's like a upward spiral effect is what she described.
Mm.
And to me, that's how this could work in an office environment. Instead of always focusing on what's wrong or broken or flawed or needs to be fixed, we think about potential and opportunities in this upward spiral manner. And that can be the way we speak to each other, the way we create space for bad ideas even. That's okay. Like, every 10 bad ideas is going to get to that one amazing idea.
True.
So that's kind of how I see it playing out in the work environment.
Yeah, that's so inspiring, and it's so wonderful to hear this from you. It's really inspiring for us as well, Heidi, and I wish we had some more time to continue our conversation. We have so many topics we want to discuss with you, so I think this just has to be the first. I think
excellent. I would love to continue our conversation.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. I mean, next time to meet in Italy or in New York or in Stockholm or Uppsala.
Yeah, we like traveling as well.
We do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love that. I just remembered the name of that author. It's Barbara Fredrickson. Barbara Fredrickson. Spiral.
Yeah, it sounds almost Scandinavian, Fredrickson. Maybe it's not. I'll have to Google it. Thank you so much for being with us, Heidi. It's been so interesting and so inspiring. And we really hope that we can meet in person the next time.
I would love that. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak with you. And I really enjoyed it. And you gave me positivity, upward spiral emotions for my day. So thank you.
So thank wonderful. You so much. Thank you so thank much. You. Ja, Rebecca, det var ju ett jätteintressant och inspirerande samtal med Heidi, eller hur?
Ja, verkligen. Ah. När mikrofonerna fungerade.
Ja, det var ju det. Tyvärr så funkar ju inte din mikrofon helt 100 i början.
Nej, men vi får se hur det blir här. Men väldigt intressant. Hon har ju erfarenheter från alla möjliga olika arbetsplatser och pratar om hur kultur på arbetsplatsen.
Precis, och det var ju så intressant att höra henne, för hon har jobbat i 20 år på 3 olika jättestora advokatbyråer och jobbar väldigt mycket med affärsjuridik och så.
Mm.
Men sen så kände hon det här att nej, men hennes värderingar stämde inte riktigt överens med det hon behövde göra, så att hon bestämde sig för att flytta på sig. Men jag tyckte det var intressant där också, vilka råd hon skulle vilja ge till sig själv som yngre. Bland annat det här med att hon började på boxning för att lära sig hur hennes kropp fungerade och hur hon så att säga lärde sig att tänka mer som en atlet fast på arbetsplatsen.
Ja, det var verkligen intressant.
Min son har ju gått på boxning.
Ja, du också.
Jag med. Precis, inte på samma avancerade nivå som min son, men det finns någonting i det där att men dels få ur sig liksom, saker och ting, men också att men var beredd på lite hugg och slag och ducka och lära sig att försvara sig, men också
Och hur man reagerar under stress och liksom så. Det är nog väldigt, väldigt nyttigt.
Verkligen. Och det här, vad fastnade du mer för i det här samtalet? Jag tyckte den här analogin med trädet, med värderingar, tyckte jag var riktigt bra. Alltså att jorden, om vi tänker våra liv som ett livsträd, alltså att jorden är liksom alla våra resurser, allt vi har runt omkring oss, men det är våra värderingar som är våra rötter som gör att vi får näring och kan hämta näring och stå stadigt.
Ja, väldigt intressant. Ja. Men också kanske man funderar på om vi saknar det lite grann i vårt
samhället.
Land, i samhället.
Ja. Ja, för vi har ju haft en serie när vi pratar om hur vi motverkar våldet och har ju det pågående det här arbetet med värderingar, och det tänker jag är väl något av det viktigaste egentligen.
Mm, verkligen.
Att få goda värderingar tillbaka i samhället och också samverka med alla goda krafter.
Precis så.
Men vi får ju fortsätta det här samtalet.
Ja, det får vi göra. Ja. Och vi ska träffa henne live.
Exakt, det måste vi nästa gång. Ja, men håll till godo så hörs vi till nästa avsnitt.
Ja.
Hej då!
Hej då!
Hej då.